Hello.
Yes, is this Michael Spooner?
Yes, is this Steve?
This is Steve Mays calling. I'm going to first of all need some proof that you are, in fact, the Mike Spooner from my childhood.
Okay. Something that you only you and I would know, right?
Yes.
What would that be? What's the question?
I don't know. I mean, you have to reach back into your memory and come up with something.
Okay, well, this won't be from memory. The other day, I was looking through a Kennett yearbook, 1964, and there's a picture of you here on the basketball team. You've got your one standing portrait here with the basketball in your hands, and you wrote here to me, and I have no idea what this means, and you probably won't either at this point, to a tough monkey who kept, quote, you know who in their place, unquote, Steve Mays. I don't know who that was.
I am sorry to report that the meaning behind that inscription is lost.
I think so. It's lost in time.
So I've got to ask, what have you been up to for the past 45 years?
Well, I think I sent you a lot of details on that, but it has been. It's been probably 45 years since I've seen you. And I had no idea what you'd even sound like, and you probably felt the same way.
Well, you know, the blog has this capacity for catching. It's sort of like a great big a net that they use in the ocean. I mean, people will be out Googling for Kennett or something, and they'll find their way to one of those websites. So it's really great to find out where you are and to get a chance to talk to you again.
Right. I mean, I feel the same way. I mean, I want to think that it's no coincidence that maybe we reconnected some way.
Oh, you're going to get all mystical on me here, right?
No, it's all right.
So, for you know, it's likely that the only people that would be listening to this are folks who are from Kennett or who grew up with us. So, for their benefit, maybe just a little background. You went all through the Kennett school system with us up until, I believe, you said 64.
Right. I finished the 10th grade.
And, you know, we wondered what happened to you.
You did?
I remember...
I didn't sneak out the back door and take off.
I remember walking down the hall at high school and going, has anybody seen Mike? And, no, I'm seriously, I had forgotten that you had moved away. You said your family moved to the Flint, Michigan area?
Right. But you see how easy it is to be forgotten.
Yes, trust me, I know how.
But have you ever gone back into high school after you graduated? You're just totally out of, you know, you don't fit, you know, there's it doesn't feel right. However, we went to Flint, Michigan. I know very little, I think, of my life, but before, you know, we just kind of got to know each other in school. But my dad, my mother and father were living in Flint, Michigan early on in my life, when I was five, and when I was the age of five, my father was killed in a car accident in Michigan. And so my mother, being from Kennett, we came back, we packed up and came to Kennett. And my grandfather, who is very well known, had been very well known in Kennett, Zach Hastings.
Oh,
you,
yeah.
You probably know Zach.
Yeah.
That was my grandfather. My mother's father, and so we came to Kennett, and it was a nice, beautiful, little, safe place to live, and I often think about how safe it was for us to grow up there. But so I entered school system and, you know, went through those years, and then for some reason my mother felt like going back to Flint, where we had some relatives, was a smart move, and I don't know exactly why, but she felt like maybe, you know, the job opportunities would have been better or whatever. So why that particular year, I'm not sure, but we moved. And, I finished the 11th and 12th grade. And, you know, I'd moved on into my sports at that time, of course, was swimming more than anything else, swimming and diving. And I was in swimming and diving in the remainder of high school and into college. I was a springboard diver as well. So...
Now, I got to interrupt you.
Yes.
Do you remember, because you shared some wonderful photos of one of the Kennett High School swim teams, Do you remember, I think it was Jerry Gage.
I know the name. Yeah, Jerry.
The older Gage brother, who would stand at the Kennett High School Municipal Pool, or the Kennett Municipal Pool on the high dive, and jump off of that down onto the low diving board, and then do a flip into the pool. Did you ever see that?
You know, I never did, and yet I almost lived through that pool. I don't think I ever saw that.
Oh, I swear I saw it with my own eyes. Or how about this one?
Well, that was an insane thing to do. But
of course it was. Do you remember the big sun deck that was way up?
It had
the sort of blue wood railing around it.
Right.
I remember seeing, I think it was the same Gage brother, stand on the top of that and then dive over the low diving board into the pool.
Incredible.
Incredible. Well, that was sort of the Kennett version of Mexico cliff diving.
Right.
So
what did he ever go into? I mean, that'd be fascinating to find out.
I don't know. And somebody's going to tell me that I just sort of, you know, imagined all of that. You you said in the bio you shared with me that you got drafted in '69. Not a good year to be drafted.
No, I was. It wasn't. It wasn't the beginning of the Vietnam War, but it was. You know, it was still in progress.
Oh, it was kind of right in the middle.
Right,
wasn't it?
Exactly. Well, I didn't go to Vietnam.
Ah, good.
I recall in some ways struggling over that because, I mean, not that I wanted to go. I didn't want to face battle or anything like that. But, you know, I was 19 years old, and I was basic training at Fort Knox, Kentucky. And my entire company basically went to Fort Polk, Louisiana, and I didn't. And so, you know, when you're in a group like that for 3-4 months, you really become connected and you feel like family to some extent, you know, and for you to be treated in some other manner, I felt too privileged and I just felt I was bothered by that. But I had learned shortly after, since my father was deceased and there was no other male spooner in my family line, they were following a policy that they had started, I think, out of World War II, that I was the sole surviving son and male name to carry my family forward. So, to my understanding, that was what it was about.
So you have had, by any measure, an illustrious career in your chosen profession, and I was trying to think during grade school or the time that we would have been together. I don't remember you being drawing things or sketching things. Were you interested in that as a kid?
Oh, no question about it. I mean, I'm surprised you didn't know that. But again, I think we kind of like hung out in different circles. You know, I mean, we knew one another. We were connected through sports. You know, and
I think you hung out with the cool kids, and I was with the pre-nerd group.
Well, I thought that was reversed.
But anyway, however, you've always been interested in art and drawing.
I have. Ah. I mean, I'll tell you, Steve, and I've said this all my life, and my earliest memory, I was interested in art. I never, in my early years, was never interested in being a dentist, a doctor, a fireman, a president, or anything other than an artist. I just knew that's who I was. I was born literally with those innate skills and that those giftings. And so, you know, I wasn't persuaded away from that ever. And so, in school, I mean, that's probably where my best grades fell, were in art. And, you know, I struggled academically. Later in life, I learned that, you know, my son has ADD. And talking with his doctor one time, that doctor said, most likely you had ADD, because I shared that, you know, what I see in my son is what I struggled with in school. And so, but at the time, you know, that wasn't understood.
Yeah, we didn't know about ADD back then.
No, so. And so, you know, I struggled, and I, you know, fell through the cracks academically. And that was a struggle, but you know, learn to overcome all that and move on into, and so consequently, you know, I really I really encourage people to, you know, to pursue their strengths, you know, and bring up their weaknesses, and encourage parents, you know, that tend to bias negatively the arts for their children because they think that either they won't be successful or they won't make financial success in their life. They don't understand that the arts offer large possibilities for great success. I mean,
well, that's a nice segue into what I wanted to talk about next.
Uh-huh.
At the risk of embarrassing you, would you mind sharing with folks listening to this some of the really cool and interesting things you have done in your career?
Well,
I mean, starting, yeah, you know, with your involvement with the Art Center College of Design in Los uh-huh. Angeles, and then maybe some of the jobs and projects you worked on?
Sure, definitely. I worked on just an enormous amount of projects, but I think that, having taught at the Art Center College of Design was a great delight for me and meant so much. It's one of the best schools of its kind in the world.
That's in Los Angeles, right?
Yes, it is. And it's an applied art school. They have a fine art department as well, but when it comes to the applied arts or the commercial arts, there's no other school like it in the world. I mean, it's been it's been around since the 1930s, and when you stop and think that most of the General Motors auto designers or Volvo or European auto designers, graduates from that school over the decades. 20 years ago, I'd learned that almost the entire staff of Volvo designers were graduates from Art Center. And that's just their auto design, product design. Well, they had, you know, illustration. They had, industrial design, product design, photography, illustration, and all of the different avenues toward the applied arts. And so I'd gone to that school, and basically I'd studied illustration and just really learning how to draw and paint and how to design. And so once you have the understanding of those three elements, you can take those into almost any avenue. But so I was an illustrator for the first 8 to 10 years as I was teaching at Art Center as well. But out of that illustrative period in my life, illustration, I was an editorial illustrator. And so
can you tell us a little, I mean, could you give us an idea of what that means?
Okay. Well, there's advertising illustration. And then between the in illustration, it's divided in generally it's between two groups, and that's one area is advertising illustration for advertising and illustration for editorial. Editorial is far more creative, or the artist becomes more involved in the creative end of it. In advertising, if you're an illustrator, you're really just an artist that illustrates what has already been designed and thought through. Because in advertising, so much money goes into an advertising campaign, the artwork is going to be very, very defined, and the artist just executes that art. Whereas editorial for magazines, for books of all kinds, children's books to adult books, anything, the art in that is far more, they lean to the artist to be the creative.
Ah, okay.
And so there's much more liberty to being creative in that area. So I was, I've always felt like I was more of a fine artist anyway, because I studied fine art earlier before I even went to Art Center. So the fine arts has always driven everything I've done. But so in editorial illustration, when the economy suffers, buying art for editorial purposes tends to wane, you know? And so during some of those years, not a lot of income was coming in. So, you know, I began to, one friend of mine who was involved on a project, an animation project, which is something I'd never thought about doing, the animation industry. They said, Michael, you know, come join us in the studio. I know that's something you've never thought about doing, but there are a lot of artists here, and it's a wonderful opportunity just to draw and paint. You know, I mean, it's outstanding. This is something all artists just love to do. So,
about what year was this?
This was in the late 70s.
So this is pre-computer for the most part,
oh,
right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything was hand-drawn and traditional. And so it was working with Ralph Bakshi, who was a director, Ralph Bakshi on Tolkien's Lord of the Rings.
Now, that is a name that a lot of us remember, and that project was a hugely popular project, right?
It was, and I think that for Bakshi, it was just an opportunity to create an exercise where he wanted to take the process of how he would to animate that into other projects. So it was just something that fell in his lap, and he said, okay, you know, he had an opportunity to be exploratory, experimental. And so there was a lot of rotoscoping, which is the process of using the photograph and actually putting a cell over a photograph on a, you know. So basically he does a lot of live action shooting, and then he breaks that down per shot. And every shot toward, you know, in the, it's kind of complex. But the point is that you draw over every image. Well, that was done for the animation. So much of the animation was for, was rotoscoped, except for some of the other, more mythic characters that, mythical characters that were not actually photographed in the first place. He did all of the story, he shot all the story in Spain, brought back that footage, and broke all that down for animators, so animators could actually draw over. And so it's a process of painting over on a cell the photographs. Whereas traditional animation primarily is, it all comes from the artist. You're not relying on photography other than maybe as reference, but you're certainly not drawing over it, and you're certainly not having photography come through that image. So if you actually look at that project, that movie, you'll see what rotoscoping. It's apparent what parts are rotoscoping, what's not. Does that make any sense?
It does. Okay. It does. And so
it's a little complex.
Did this give you a an appetite or an appreciation for animation that you hadn't had before? Or
yeah, definitely. I had no desire to be. Well, first of all, animation is not, at that moment in the 70s, was not where it was in the 80s and 90s. The animation industry was dying. It was the death of, you know, Walt Disney had died a decade or so earlier. It was just not financially something that studios were pursuing. And so it was, there's a story of the Disney's Nine Old Men, the best of the best of the Disney's animators were getting to an age where they knew that they were going to die, and all of the industry secrets, at least from Disney Studio, would die with them. That's the kind of general concept. And so they didn't want that to happen. So they basically started bringing young people into mentoring these a lot of young people. And so a lot of the best animators from Disney, at least, and some of the best in the world, are people that studied with these men. And so, but that began to stir up this industry again. And Disney began to put money back into animation. I mean, they were doing some projects, but they lost the magic, you know? And so, but when they began to stir up this whole, it was an issue of money. Money drives everything. So they thought, you know, we're going to create a whole new a level of animation, a whole new new talent. We're going to obviously use them in a new project. So let's start looking at being serious again with animation. And, of course, Disney, the enterprise, basically, you know, has moved out in various directions of entertainment, live action to the theme parks and all that. But animation was the original essence of that studio and what made Disney all the money in the first place. So, but when it had waned after his death, it really was directionless. I mean, Disney absolutely was the visionary for animation. And when he died, you know, things began to die with him. So they knew they had to turn that around. So they really put a lot of attention toward building animation, feature animation back. And that took, that was basically in the early 80s when they started this, late 70s, early 80s, and it began to come into what we know as the golden years of animation. And so in the late 90s, where you had, you know, where you had, or the early 90s, where you had Lion King, I mean, that made an enormous amount of money for Disney. And
The Little Mermaid.
I mean, just all those projects made an enormous amount of money because Disney, at that point now, they were behind this. You know, there's no better promotion machine than Walt Disney. So,
and you were part of this animation team during the 80s?
Well, not with Disney, not until the 90s. But again, going back now, but the point is, at the, in the late 70s, animation was nowhere. I mean, it was just not doing anything. And, of course, Ralph Bakshi had done had been in television animation and some other personal projects. But when he was doing Lord of the Rings, again, it was experimental for him. It made some money, not much, but, you know, it wasn't overly successful. However, that was my entry into animation. That's all that to say is animation, I didn't even think, even consider animation. I wanted to be an illustrator. So, but again, like I said, in illustration, to make a living in illustration, a lot of it depends on the economy, whether the economy is strong or not. And so I entered animation. Well, I loved it. First of all, I loved the fact that I wasn't sitting at home alone illustrating a project here and a project there, but suddenly I got onto a project that took many months, and I cooperated. I had to cooperate with an enormous amount of other talent, and again, at the time, it's an opportunity to really learn because you're in a context of, you know, a larger studio, an enormous amount of talent that you're working with, you're inspired by, the mentoring to some extent that goes on there. It was a wonderful opportunity to grow and to just draw and paint every day. Whereas an illustrator, you have a project, you kind of, you know, do a lot of research on it, reference material, and you finally kind of do that project, and then you're off looking for another job to some extent. But, you know, there's just, if you're an artist, you really like to draw and paint. You really like drawing. And so this medium of animation offered that for me.